They were not important or famous people. Luke says that the name of one of them was Cleopas. And that's about all we know about him. It's interesting, though, that in the Gospel of John, one of the Marys who had stayed at the cross was Mary, the wife of Cleopas. If this is the same man, then the other man that we assume is walking down the road with Cleopas is not a man at all. It's probably his wife, Mary. Whoever they were, they loved Jesus very much. And they had followed him earnestly in their own way. And now Jesus was gone. And they were desperately lonely, afraid, and unsure of themselves and the future. Have you ever noticed that some of the saddest words in our language begin with the letter D? There's disappointment. There's doubt. There's disillusionment, defeat, despair, and the biggie of all times, death. And all of those are summed up in the words of Cleopas and his companion and to the stranger who joined him on the road to Emmaus. They were left the dispirited and confused band of disciples with whom the events of Good Friday were fresh in their minds. The Master that they had revered and loved and followed had been put horribly to death. A cruel death of the most degrading kind. You know that crucifixion was the most shameful means of death. The victim was made a public display, exposed to the jeers of all that passed by. And only a week before, on Palm Sunday, the disciples' hopes had risen to fever pitch. The excited crowds had hailed their master as the longed-for deliverer from the tyranny of Rome. But now, he lay dead somewhere, his body probably stolen from the tomb. And their hopes were dashed, and their dream was over. The little band of followers were leaderless and falling apart. And even the report of Christ's tomb being empty did nothing to alter their feelings. It only confused them. Their entire world had come apart. Ever been there? Are you there now? The two despondent disciples summed up the situation neatly when they said, "We had hoped. We had hoped." You know, sometimes God is at work in our lives and we don't know it. Discouragement, frustration, and anger make us blind to God's presence, even when God is right there beside us. The scripture says that when Jesus joined them, talked to them, explained the scriptures to them, they were prevented from recognizing him. Now, what prevented them? We don't know. Some believe that God prevented them for some divine reason. But I kind of think maybe it was their own attitude that prevented them. Often God is alive and well and working in the church and in the lives of those in the church, but we don't recognize it because our attitude blocks our vision. Our attitude, our pain and sorrow, our loss and disappointment can make us blind to God's working presence in our life and in the life of the church. Disappointment and frustration causes us to lose our perspective and focus on ourselves. We become selfish, concerned only with our wants and our needs. And we don't care about everybody else. And that lost perspective removes the joy and contentment from our lives. We want to be somewhere else. We want to be doing something else. We just want to be somebody else. And all of us have traveled that road to Emmaus. It appears at those times when we're all alone. That's what makes it so desolate. Because nobody knows what we're going through. And worse than that, we're really afraid that nobody cares. Emmaus is every person's home. Emmaus could be any place, just as long as it's 7 miles distant from frustration, confusion, grief, and despair. Cleopas and his companion wanted to get out of town, to get away from it all in order to forget, to sort out their feelings and somehow find a way to start all over again. So they headed west, talking together as if saying it again and again would somehow make it go away, retelling the story to one another to ease the pain and share the heaviness. We know where Emmaus is. We've been there in one way or another at some time in our life. Emmaus is whatever we do or wherever we go to salvage and sort out the feelings, to summon the desire and the courage to keep on going, to try and forget. Emmaus is whatever we do or wherever we go to reclaim our sanity when all the world goes to pieces and when all of our ideals and our dreams are violated and distorted. It may happen at the betrayal of someone we respect or an illness that has no cure. The death of our spouse or a parent or the death of a relationship may take us to Emmaus. Emmaus is everybody's death. But Luke says that Easter means we are not alone. Luke gives that affirmation in this story. Wherever we are, in the middle of Emmaus or on the road to get there, Jesus is with us. John puts that same message on the lips of Jesus when he says, "I will not leave you comfortless. I will come to you." And yet, when Jesus came to him, they didn't recognize him. They thought he was a stranger. And what that tells me is, if I'm not very alert, I may miss him. Because he touches our lives ever so gently. Oh, okay, sometimes he doesn't touch it gently. But most of the time, it's just a little nudge to keep us moving along the journey. One of the greatest images in the Bible is that of a shepherd who goes out and looks for the sheep that are lost and scattered. Jesus says, "I am the good shepherd." In 23rd Psalm, we see the words, "The Lord is my shepherd." And perhaps the greatest miracle of all in this story is one that we don't even see. It's that God knew exactly where to find those two disciples. So often we assume that we're the ones that are searching and hunting for God. The good news of the gospel is that God is looking and searching for us. Simon Tugwell says it best in his book when he says, "Very often we are not looking for God, very far from it. We are in high rebellion against God." And God knows that and has taken it into account. God follows us into our own darkness, where we thought we could finally escape God. We ran straight into God's arms. Our hope in the Christian faith is not in our determination to find God, but in God's determination to find us, wherever we are. There's an interesting story of a traveler who's walking along the road one day when a man on horseback rushes by. There's an evil look in his eye and blood on his hands. Minutes later, a crowd of riders draw up and ask if the traveler had seen someone with blood on his hands go by. They were in hot pursuit. "Who is he?" the traveler asked. "An evildoer," said the leader of the crowd. "And you pursue him in order to bring him to justice?" asked the traveler. "No," said the leader. "We pursue him in order to show him the way." The picture we have in the New Testament is of a God who pursues us so that God may show us the way. Christ comes after these two disciples. They all recognize him, but it is he who takes the initiative. He walks with them and interprets Scripture for them. Now, often we think we have to pound on heaven's door to get God's attention. If I just pray often enough, if I get down on my knees, if I clean up my life, if I serve the church, then maybe God will notice my situation and do something. But the picture of the New Testament is not of our pounding on God's door, but Christ gently knocking on ours. Christ continually comes to us, like we heard earlier in the music and in the offering, in the face of other people around us. We just don't recognize it. Wouldn't you figure that at some point on the journey, one of these people would have gotten an inkling of who it was that they were traveling with? You see, I think our tendency is to look for Christ in the extraordinary, the spectacular, and the breathtaking. Remember Superman the movie? Lois Lane is dangling from a cable high atop the Daily Planet building, screaming at the top of her lungs. And just as she begins to fall, Superman changes into his flashy red, yellow, and blue outfit and catches her in midair. "Don't worry, miss," he assures her. "I've got you." "You've got me," she exclaims. "Who's got you?" And before he can answer, the helicopter that's been perched on the edge of the building starts to fall straight down toward them and the crowd below. And Superman barely grabs it with his free arm and gently sets both of it and Lois safely on the landing pad. And as he flies with that twist up into the air, Lois faints into a heap. Remember that scene? That's the way we want Christ to come to us. We want him to catch us in midair while he's juggling all the rest of the stuff that's going on in the world. And that's why we miss him. Christ reveals himself as he has always revealed himself, through the Word and through the sacraments, through the study of the Scripture and the breaking of the bread. And he lives daily among us in the lives of the ordinary people we meet. I read this passage. It says, sacred moments are often everyday moments. The moments which, if we do not look with more than our eyes or listen with more than our ears, reveal only a garden, a stranger coming down the road behind us, a meal like any other meal. But if we look with our hearts, if we listen with our whole being and our imagination, what we see is Jesus himself. Now, when the three travelers arrived at their destination, Jesus plays with them. He pretends that he's going to go on, but is invited in for dinner, and when he breaks the bread, they recognize him, and he's gone. at the end of the story, these two disciples do what is only natural. When the two disciples realize who they've seen, who they have spent the afternoon with, they get back on that same old dusty road and return to Jerusalem to share their experience with the other disciples. The road that had been marked by defeat and shattered hope. But now, the road was different. Now the road is full of possibilities. Same road, different destination. Same road, different conversation. Same road, different observations. Same road, different realizations. They came back to Jerusalem, not as defeated disciples, but as witnesses of the resurrection. Bottom line, the resurrection changes everything. It transforms us. It moves us from despair to new possibilities in life. It takes us in our blindness and opens our eyes. It transforms ordinary bread into a holy meal. It takes sad, lost followers on the road to Emmaus who had lost the only world they knew and gives it back to them. Jesus comes to them and says, "See, I'm not dead. I'm alive. Now go tell the world." All of us are on a journey. No matter where we are on the journey, Jesus says, "I'm not dead. I'm alive. Go tell the world."